For Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, April 5th, 2018. And on this day, Maine reactions to President Trump's plan to put National Guard troops at the border with Mexico. And a new documentary looks at just how complicated people's political opinions are. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
President Trump's proclamation directing the deployment of the National Guard to the U.S.-Mexico border to fight illegal immigration has prompted some pushback from some members of Maine's congressional delegation. As A.J. Higgins reports, they want to know more about how many troops would be called and for how long.
President Trump's call for troops along the Mexican border caught many by surprise. And as Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen emphasized during a Wednesday press conference, the president is in a hurry.
We do hope that the deployment begins immediately. I will be continuing to have conversations with the governors today.
According to the Associated Press, Trump has characterized illegal immigration over the southern border as having reached a, quote, point of crisis, threatening the safety, security, and sovereignty of the American people. The governors of the southwestern states that border Mexico have been largely supportive of the initiative, but some of those to the north have been less so. Democratic Governor Kate Brown of Oregon says that her state will not be answering the call to militarize the U.S. border. Here in Maine, the governor's office and the state adjutant general are still waiting for that call. Republican Senator Susan Collins says if it comes, it wouldn't be the first time that a president has made such a request.
Two previous presidents have also deployed Guard members on the border.
But Collins says deploying the Guard to the border requires clear justification, and that's something she says the president has not yet provided.
I'm concerned that the administration does not seem to have a very firm plan in mind about how many troops, how long would they be there, for what purpose. Whenever we use the military for law enforcement purposes, given the restrictions against doing that, Congress should be involved in the decision-making.
Federal law prohibits the use of active duty service members to conduct law enforcement inside the U.S. unless specifically authorized by Congress. An Associated Press report quoted one congressional aide as saying that 300 to 1,200 troops could be deployed at a cost of between $60 million to $120 million a year. And those numbers concern independent Senator Angus King of Maine.
This is going to cost money. It's going to be expensive, and we don't know how long these deployments would be.
In addition to the price tag, King questions why the Trump administration is trying to convince the state's governors to call out the Guard at a time when illegal border crossings are at some of the lowest levels in more than 45 years.
First question is there an emergency? What's the problem? The second question is, what would be the mission of these troops? These are not people that are trained to be Border Patrol agents. They're not law enforcement agents. In fact, I think they're prohibited from being law enforcement agents. So I'd want to understand what they're supposed to be doing.
First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree opposes the deployment and was skeptical of Trump's intent. And in a written statement, she said that the proclamation was, quote, a politically motivated effort to exploit anti-foreigner sentiment and appeal to his base. Second District Congressman Bruce Poliquin did not immediately reply to requests for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
The Public Utilities Commission voted yesterday to approve a $1.2 million taxpayer subsidy to an embattled biomass company that operates two plants in West Enfield and Jonesboro. Steve Missler has more.
The vote by the three-member commission largely followed the recommendation of PUC staff, which found last month that Stored Solar LLC met only one of its three contract obligations, while falling well short of the other two. It maintained the agreed-upon number of jobs, but purchased less than 40% of the waste wood it promised, and it spent less than $1 million on capital expenditures than it was supposed to. Some lawmakers said the $1.2 million subsidy should be reduced further based on that performance. But during deliberations held Wednesday, PUC Chairman Mark Vinoy said the authorized payment is far less than what Stored Solar could have received.
If the plants had operated at full capacity and Stored Solar met all of its contract criteria, the payment would have been approximately $4.6 million. Instead, it's $1.2 million, which is a reduction of roughly 75%.
Stored Solar has faced intense scrutiny since winning the subsidy contract late in 2016. Logging contractors reported a rash of late payments throughout last year. In this year, a bill was introduced that effectively voided its contract while calling for an investigation. Some lawmakers have questioned whether the company should have ever qualified for the subsidy program following an examination of the 2016 bailout law by Maine Public Radio. But so far, that scrutiny has yet to yield legislative action. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
A retired Marine general and expert on national securities in Maine today to talk about what he sees as one of the biggest threats to stability, climate change. General John Castelaw says there are currently 32 locations around the world where conflict aggravated by climate change is affecting U.S. interests. And as Susan Sharon reports, Castelaw sees few ways to restore order.
He spent 36 years in the Marines, and while he says his view of climate change as a national security threat was shaped over time, he says he's not alone and that his peers in the military share his assessment.
All of us that have had the military as a profession approach these issues without emotion. You know, the most important thing to me is not hugging bears or kissing trees or anything like that. The most important factor is, what do we need to do to ensure the defense of this great nation of ours? And so those in the military are not going to not take into consideration any threat that has an impact on their ability to achieve that mission.
So you're saying, yes, they do care about it?
Well, of course we do.
Castelaw points to the Lake Chad Basin crisis in Central Africa as one region where climate change is acting as a threat multiplier, creating competition for water resources, disrupting food production, and destabilizing security.
I went to that location in Africa in the early 90s, and I came back last year, and I flew over the lake, and I looked down, and, you know, it's 10% of what it was in the 1960s. Well, you already had some tension between, you know, herdsmen that ran cattle and fishermen and farmers. The instability.
That instability, Castelaw says, makes the area ripe for terrorist groups like Boko Haram and also puts large numbers of people on the move in search of food and safety, creating issues for neighboring countries and for their partners. Closer to home, Castelaw is concerned about the threat of sea level rise on several dozen military installations around the country, including the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard.
Right now you have maybe a dozen flood events, extreme flood tides, that have an impact on the shipyard. By 2050, it's going to rise to potentially 180. And that will impact the dockyard, some of the crane tracks. And, well, why do we care? Well, we care because Portsmouth is only one of four naval shipyards that we still have in existence. And their primary mission is to refurbish and modernize nuclear submarines.
The shipyard has installed a microgrid to mitigate for some of the effects of sea level rise. But Castelaw says addressing the fundamental causes of climate change is also essential. And that means curtailing the use of fossil fuels and transitioning to cleaner alternatives such as solar and natural gas. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And finally today, Alan Krizak's documentary, Who Made You in America, looks at people's political viewpoints and how they relate to immigration. He made the film with students at the University of Maine at Machias, who discovered that their own assumptions about the ideological divides between rural and urban, conservative and liberal, failed to capture a much more complicated reality. For Krizak, that journey began with his first somewhat impromptu interview with Machias resident Harold Cokayne. That's C-O-K-A-Y-N-E. Harold's house caught Krizak's eye.
They have these huge posters on their house, even after the election, these gigantic Trump posters and Jail Hillary posters and all this. Every time I drove by the house, I got annoyed because of my political views.
Hello, my name is Harold L. Cocaine. I live in East Machias.
I just walked up to his house, talked to him, and I was very honest with him. I said, you know, dude, your house completely offends me. I get angry every time I drive by it.
I live on a busy corner in a rural area, and I was not afraid to put up my political, social views about government, about politics, and about faith.
You know, every poster makes me mad. So I said, I want to meet the guy who's behind these posters.
I think I probably just said, hi, how you doing? What can I do for you?
Once I laid my agenda on the table, like, okay, you know who I am, then he trusted me.
My faith tells me to trust until I have a reason not to trust.
And then I turned into, you know, documentary person and brought my class along later and said, let's talk to this guy and find out what makes him tick.
I'm seeking truth. I'm not really a total liberal, and I'm not a total hardcore right-leaning Republican.
This is a guy and his wife with a Trump hat, jail Hillary all over the house, and the first thing he tells me is about helping a Haitian refugee after the earthquake down there and helping him find a home and feed him and give him shelter and take him off to a church of his choice up here.
He came up here on a visa, and we met him one day. He's looking for a church, and we took him to ours. We talked, and for just amazing reasons, we clicked. It was our faith that made it click. He has a wonderful heart, and he understands why people want to come here.
So the first thing you hear is like the appearance turns into something a lot more subtle than the talking heads that, you know, we've turned into.
And what I saw here, and from watching Trump and California sanctuary cities on both ways, the current president we have really wants to overhaul the whole situation. In all fairness, it's like we have to redo the laws.
So I was interested in the dissonance of this story. His house is screaming to me, you know, keep the foreigners away. You know, Islam is probably bad too, and all that basic right-wing rhetoric. But what their actions were doing were based on Christianity, and that was at direct odds with who I thought, you know, they were going to be as Trump supporters. That's the crux of this whole documentary.
And I think one of the biggest problems with society is we put all these unreasonable labels, whether it be race, whether it be gender, whether it be nationality, whether it be all these things. But what we need to do is find and seek out the individual person.
You have the rural stereotype of the further you go out, it's going to be more racist, more right-wing or whatever. And urban is, of course, left-wing. It was not like that at all. It didn't change my political outlook, but it made me realize that I'm just as prejudiced in different ways as the more overt prejudice people.
What our framers of the Constitution wanted was well-informed people that knew what their freedoms were, knew what their responsibilities were, and all these things to go and vote. And it's the people that make the difference.
And Machias resident Harold Cocaine and documentarian Alan Krizak. His Who Made You in America airs tonight at 10 on Maine Public Television, that piece produced by Willis Ryder Arnold. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, April 5th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.